The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Now, whether it's delayed referrals to essential psychiatric services or accidentally reporting alcohol misuse by a teetotaler, unapproved staff availing of an early vaccine, the whole Maurice McCabe saga, a failure to follow up on allegations of abuse, the child and family agency TUSLA has had its share of shortcomings reported. Now, joining me to talk about the agency and its future is TUSLA CEO Bernard Gloucester. Bernard, good morning.
Morning, Pat. Nice to talk to you.
Now, your job, it would appear, a part of it anyway, is to rehabilitate the agency in the public's esteem.
Well, I think, and that certainly, I think, is one of the priority focus. And can I just say, I think in the context of the intro, you're quite right with the challenges that the childcare services in Ireland have had, both prior to the establishment of TUSLA, when they were in the HSE, and indeed since the establishment of TUSLA. When I came to the agency, I had agreed with the board that really there were three key priorities of focus, and that was the quality of the service, the staffing environment, because we predominantly deliver our services through people, and public confidence, which you've rightly just mentioned. And so, a lot of good work is done in TUSLA, and I think it's important that we would recognise that there are people up and down the country today in TUSLA who do an awful lot of good work, do a very good job. But probably one of the biggest challenges for the agency in its improvement agenda is achieving a consistency of improvement and a sustainability. And we'll talk about
the different aspects of that. But maybe for people who just hear the name TUSLA every time you're in the news headlines, what is your mission? I mean, what does the state charge you to do?
Yeah, and that's often, I think, something that's misunderstood in the public context. People, I think, tend to think of just the singular focus of child protection, and there's no doubt that's our primary statutory responsibility. And in the context of child protection and welfare in this country, people might be shocked to hear, but we are the state agency. We're the official part of the state for responding to child protection and welfare concerns. And over 55,000 of those a year are notified to us, all of which require attention and all of which require some level of assessment and intervention. Beyond that, we're also the state's responsibility for alternative care for children. That's for children who can't live at home and have to come into the care of the state for a period of time. And there's almost 6,000 of those. We're responsible for the entire family support system, which is provided by the voluntary sector in the main up and down the country. We're responsible for the education welfare service, as it used to be. We call it education support now. That's the old school attendance system. Mm-hmm. We're also the regulator of over 4,000 creches and preschools and the whole range of other services. We provide the adoption services for the country, which is very much in the news.
Bernard,
it's a whole series of statutory.
It's too much for one agency, it would almost appear. All of those things that you're responsible for, what are the mechanisms by which you swing into action? I mean, do you wait for complaints or are you proactive? I mean, who can call you? Parents, teachers, Gardaí, HSE? Who can lift the phone to TUSLA and insist upon some response?
So essentially anybody can make a referral to TUSLA. On our website, tusla.ie, there's quite a good simple navigation for people who have a concern about a child and how to maybe advance that. It's fair to say a significant proportion of the referrals would come from professionals, Gardaí, doctors, nurses, school teachers, youth organisations, clubs and so on. And you'd be familiar with the fact that Ireland introduced a mandatory reporting system in recent years for a large number of those professions. But we do also get quite a significant number of referrals from families, from extended families, from communities and so on. And perhaps just to give you an indication of that, if you take the last full normal year we've had, because COVID has curveballed everybody, but in 2019 we had 55,000 referrals and 25,000 of those were in what we call the child protection category, physical abuse, emotional abuse, sexual abuse, neglect, and they would predominantly come from mandated reporters and from professionals. But another 31,000 were people who were concerned generally about the welfare of a specific child or a specific family, and they came from all sources. So anybody can make a referral to TISLA.
Now, your mission statement, it requires action by you in a certain time frame. I've heard the time frame being 20 days. Is that a fact? It seems, on one level, if it's an emergency, far too long. But, you know, perhaps it's too short in terms of other needs which might not be as urgent.
Well, I think it's probably far too technical to go into the different types of configurations of response, because different situations require different responses. But I think let's put it in fairly clear terms. When our Child Protection Service receives a referral, that referral is screened on the basis of the information that comes in as it comes in. If based on the opinion of the professional staff who are dealing with that, that's a high priority or there are significant and immediate risk factors, that's responded to immediately. But then there are different times that move out from that in terms of the detailed work that goes into further assessment and making decisions and establishing plans to keep children safe into the future. And we're very lucky, I think, in this country that we're matched in our own response service by an emergency response facility in the legislation which the Gardaí have and which they do utilise. Yeah. And we work with them very closely on that.
Now you talked at the beginning about this being a people business, that all your services are delivered through people. This is not about high tech or low tech. It's, you know, people to people. Do you have enough people? Because I saw that you're going to offer jobs to every graduating social work student this year, which suggests that you really are short-staffed.
Yeah, so I think we'd probably be accused by other social work employers of being a little bit unfair on that, but we are the main employer of social workers in the country. So again, just to give you context on that, TUSLA has struggled since its inception to fill its staffing complement, be that social workers, social care workers, or indeed frontline clerical staff. It has struggled with that. Last year was the first year that we hit our full employment of what we were funded to do. That was 4,795 full-time equivalents. And the difference is, I suppose, that's what we're funded to do as opposed to what perhaps might be needed. Thankfully, with the support of the Minister in Budget 2021, we're going to substantially increase that again. Now we're going to deploy another 120 posts over the course of this year into frontline services. I took the decision this year in order to build on the steps we took last year. Last year, we reduced our dependency on agency staff, reduced our bill on agency staffing by about 20 million by doing that, and by employing those people directly. So this year, I've taken the decision that graduate social workers in all of the training institutions in the Republic of Ireland, which will be about 220 in one year, we offer them all the opportunity to apply for and be assessed for a permanent job, so that they're ready to go when they qualify and that they know they have a permanent job if they want one. And we had 174 applicants for that, which is really encouraging. I'm not sure how many of them would convert, and they're being interviewed as we speak. So we do make efforts, but I think we also have to look beyond the single discipline of social work, and we have to look at new models where we have a mix of social work and other disciplines, because lots of other disciplines can also play a huge part in supporting children and families.
Yeah. Now, I came across this in preparing to have a chat with you, Bernard. I came across this expression or term, CASP, which stands for Child Abuse Substantiation Procedure. What is CASP? Because I'm a bit disturbed by what it offers, to be quite honest. Explain.
Okay, so again, it would take perhaps much longer than the broader scope of an interview like this, and perhaps some of our clinical staff to explain. But if I give you the headline on it, CASP is predominantly associated with where we receive a referral, and very often it's retrospective referrals made by adults in relation to their childhood, and particularly childhood sexual abuse experience. When we receive a referral, our predominant focus is the future safety of a child and the safety of children today. But some of the people who might be alleged to have caused offences in the past, or who might be named in someone's story about their past, they may be working with children, or they may have access to children today, maybe because of their job or because of their family circumstances. And if we're proposing to share information for the purpose of protecting other children, we do have to go through what is determined as a substantiation process. And that substantiation process didn't really exist until 2014. There was a policy came in 2014. And because of individual case judgments and determinations since then, in a number of cases which have been appealed to the High Court, there's a need to update that procedure and that policy to reflect some of those judgments. That's what CASP is. But the critical point, I think, is that I decided again in COVID-19 to defer the introduction of the new policy on the advice available to me. And we've now put it out to consultation with a lot of the interested stakeholders and the people who would be have concerns about it.
I mean, as I understand it, the person who is accused of a sexual abuse activity, whether it's historic or even contemporaneously, that the accused gets to cross-examine the accuser.
Well, so two parts to that, Pat. The first thing is the legal basis on which we conduct substantiation at all is quite thin, and the Minister and the Department are well aware of the need for legislative reform in this area. Our skill is in protecting children today as opposed to proving or substantiating abuse. But nonetheless, it's something that still has to be done as part of that. The focus on the issue of cross-examination, I think it's a little bit concerning because when you read the actual procedure and the guidance, that comes across in a very different way. The reality is that there are court judgments and determinations that rule that in certain situations, people who are accused of certain things, they have rights, and they do have the right to put question or examination of what it is they're accused of. What our guidance is very clear about is there is no basis and there is no question on which a vulnerable person or a person who doesn't wish to is going to be subjected to that in any way that might appear from what you would read in the papers that someone has marched into a
That someone would be re-traumatised by that
encounter. To our staff, the guidance to our staff in the new procedure is to consider very carefully that where it is required and to look at other possibilities of ways of doing it, like perhaps doing it in writing it or doing it through a series of questions in that format. So it's not
But you'd prefer, it appears you'd prefer that substantiation and investigation of an allegation would not be part of Thusa's role, that somebody else, maybe the Gardaí, would do it.
Yeah, well, I think I would, yes, and I've said that on the record, but I would want to balance that by saying I do think there has to be an avenue for people who are making disclosures of retrospective abuse, particularly sexual abuse. I do think there has to be an avenue in which, firstly, services support those people and help them and assist them through their trauma and through that journey. And the second is that if children today need to be protected, that there is some method by which that information can be scrutinised and shared. But I think investigation itself and substantiation is not something we would see as our primary skill set and priority. We would see it much more in the care domain and the protection of children today. That has to be our first priority. Yeah. But it's a very complex area, and I'm hoping that the engagement with the stakeholders over the coming weeks is something that will lead to the best possible iteration of that procedure, including even things like the language that's used. So you mentioned cross-examination. So let's look and see if there's language that can lend itself to a better way. And who better to ask than the people who have a vested interest in it, as opposed to just Thusa itself.
Now, we talk about the quality, and you hope that the quality of the response with additional staff resources and so on will be top notch, and you address staffing, which will increase. Obviously, you could do with a more robust budget, and therefore you could attract even more staff to do the job that needs to be done. But the third thing you mentioned was, you know, public confidence. And when they read, sometimes these are historical things. You know, there was an apology to a woman for a 5-year delay in reacting to her report of childhood
That's
sexual
right,
abuse.
Yeah.
Then there was the case of a staff branding someone as an abuser of alcohol when, in fact, they were a teetotaler. We know that was dubbed a cut and paste error. We had the Maurice McCabe thing, which never really understood how that particular thing happened in Thusla, a very serious matter of a suicide of a child who had been reported 11 times in the previous year prior to the suicide. Now, these largely are historical things, but they're the things that still appear in newspaper and other reporting. And you've got to somehow get a grip on all of this. And as I said at the very beginning, rehabilitate Tuzla in the estimation of the general public.
Yeah, and I think there's probably two or three particular points to that. The first thing I would say is that I've sat in front of many of those people that you've referred to in those stories, and you could not be indifferent to where they've been left feeling, and in some cases the outcomes for them as a result of our errors, mistakes, oversights, or shortcomings. And I would never want to take from those experiences. And equally, to balance that with the fact, as I say, that in the many thousands of people we deal with every day, there are also good services provided. In relation to public confidence particularly, look, I set out three parts to reforming the agency: their practice, their culture, and their structure. I think the culture piece is about how we relate to people and our general behaviour as public servants, and not being defensive, appropriately defending, but not being defensive. Our practice, we've making lots of improvement in that. Our regulatory compliance rates, if you look across the whole profile of HICWA reports, have dramatically improved in recent times, but not consistently so. And perhaps the third part of the change that's most critical for me right now, and that the board are very focused on, and we're concerned about the time it's taken to us to get it, is to actually change the structure of the agency. I have said that the structure of the agency in terms of its management structure is quite frankly not suitable. It's not appropriate, and it's very concerning. We've made decisions and plans around that. To be fair to Minister O'Gorman, he's been quite supportive of it, but it is taking a lot longer than we would need to get it over the line, because it is outside of our control. It does involve government departments and others making other decisions. But I'm very hopeful that in the coming weeks we can sort that. But unless I can address the consistency factor, we can make improvements tomorrow in anything. I think you yourself would know that. You could make improvements in one part of a healthcare system and at the expense of others. We need to make consistent improvements so that the children who are in Donegal and Dingle and Dublin can reasonably expect the same level and consistent level of service in a highly regulated environment.
Bernard, thank you very much for joining us. It's very important work that you do in Tuzla, and we wish you well in that endeavour. The CEO of Tuzla, Bernard Gloster, thank you very much for joining us.